baby! Touchdown!
Welcome in, everybody, to your Thursday edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. This is now, well, we're running a pretty good streak of podcasts in a row. I think we had to take one day off because of the Columbus Power hiatus. But we're doing okay for this month, trying to deliver a podcast to you every day. I'm Jake Burns. I have a great guest for us in just a moment. Reminder of great things going on at the OBR, and you might be confused. We took the week off of Twitch just to recharge the batteries. It's a downtime, not much to talk about. We figure all of the important news is going to come, come about in July. I mean, we have some news that we talked about yesterday with Deshaun Watson settling some of his court situations in civil court. We're going to talk with John about that in a second. I elaborated some of my thoughts yesterday's podcast. You can feel free to go back and check those out. I'm sure I'll share a little bit here with John as well. But yeah, that's kind of the biggest news. There was not much out there today other than a report that creeped out about an hour ago as I was sitting here getting ready for this podcast. And we're going to touch on that report from Josina Anderson about Baker Mayfield here in just a minute. Up on the OBR site, Corey Kinnon took a look at draft needs that are pretty evident for the Browns going into next year. Those needs are laid out pretty clearly. There's five of them. That's worth a checking out. It's a free read for anybody. And then also we had Jack Duffin, who just really wrote up the information from Pro Football Focus, putting out a financial salary cap, basically a health report for every team and ranking them. So Jack summarized that and tied in some of his thoughts too. So those are the two things up at the OBR. We have Cody Sook's tight end rankings going up tomorrow, so make sure to check that out. But for today's episode, we're going to start with a little bit of a special twist. If you have not seen Top Gun Maverick yet, shut the pod off for a little while. Advance about 5 minutes, maybe more, maybe less. Depends on how good this conversation goes. But I'm going to welcome in John Colosimo, and we're going to talk about what I think was one of the best movie theater experiences I've ever had. John, what's up, man? And I just want your unfiltered first thoughts on what was a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really, really good time. I got to go today, which I'm lucky because, you know, any more you got, especially for that one, you wanted to get the, you know, the perks. You didn't want to get like the base kind of level theater experience, I don't think. And like after a couple of weeks, they start to drop you off of those ones. They only put the hot new ones up in the IMAX and that kind of stuff.
Come on, man.
What's that?
It was Jurassic Park. I went for a second time.
Yeah.
I had Jurassic World, I know. Or whatever it is. And I was like, come on.
Right, exactly. Yeah, today it was Jurassic Park, and I forget the other one. So I got into at least like the prime, whatever, AMC one, which is, you know, your nice kickback seats and pretty good sound. And that's, I think, a necessity in this movie because they really rattle you in this one. And
I got to know if anybody out there is still going to movie theaters that don't have predetermined seats and those seats that like recline, let me know. Cause I can't do it anymore, John. I can't do it.
No.
It's completely like showing up 15 minutes late because the previews these days are like 30 minutes, but I know I have my seat. I can be there when I want to be there. Like, I don't even really remember the movie theater going experience where I didn't have the seat predetermined. It's almost wild to think about that. But anyway, I shouldn't have interrupted you, but that's just a thought that popped in my mind. Because you're right. This is a movie you have to consume on the loudest, biggest screen you can possibly find.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Went in there and, you know, they're rattling that seat. I mean, it's pretty awesome sound in this one. And it's really kind of built for that. So just a lot of fun, like, you know, I mean, summertime blockbuster type movie. I mean, checks every box.
Checked every box. Thought they could have really packed that one in too. Like I thought it could have been a nostalgia play where the script was terrible. No matter what you do, when you go from 1986 in a fighter pilot movie to 2022, it's going to be a sincere upgrade. I thought not only did they hammer out those scenes, and if you have not checked out the inside stuff that they've posted, because this movie wasn't it supposed to come out in like right before or right during the pandemic, and they decided to hold off on it. So they did a ton of like, you know, documentary based things on their experience. And Miles Teller talks about how, you know, they were going up in these planes and they were shooting these scenes, and obviously they're not flying. They're made to appear to be flying the plane, but they're not flying it. I mean, that's a major duh, but just in case anybody was oblivious to that fact, they're not flying it. They're sitting in the back, but they have to read these lines. So the camera in the cockpit is in there. It's there, but there's nobody to yell action. There's nobody to, you know, make a moment of this whole thing. So you just have to kind of do it as you go. And I thought that was interesting. Like they would get a couple hours worth of footage when they were up there, and they just have to come back and see how they did or what needed to be redone or anything like that. And, you know, that part of it's really cool. So if you can get a chance to check that out and read, but I didn't know how, like, Tom Cruise is really, he's not one of these Top Gun pilots by any nature, but he can really fly, and he can fly some aggressive planes. Have you seen any of that stuff from him? Like, it's not unnatural. The way he handles it is not unnatural at all.
No, that, you know, I know he's famous for doing a ton of his own stunts. I didn't know he could fly, though.
I don't know that he flew, obviously, the most difficult stuff. Like, I'm not saying he did that, and somebody might be listening to this saying I'm giving him even too much credit, but he's got stuff out there where he's flying some pretty impressive planes and doing some upside down maneuvers and different things. Like, he's doing some things. Like, I don't think he, you know, he's not flying that valley run they're doing in 2 seconds or, you know, two and a half minutes or 2:15. I can't remember what he ends up running it in to keep his position or job. Yeah. Yeah, it's like he's not doing that stuff, obviously. At least I hope not. I mean, I guess I could be wrong, but I don't think he was. But, you know, he can do some stuff. It's just it's not an unnatural thing for him. So I always thought he fit into doing that really. But the script was good. And not only was the script pretty good, balancing that nostalgia to me is really tough in a movie like this, which is heavily built on this. I mean, this is a movie that a lot of people watched who were born after, right? Like, I mean, I remember watching Top Gun, and I was born after the movie was made. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's an interestingly rewatchable movie. I mean, if you go back and watch Top Gun now, there's some moments where you're like, oh, okay, it's 1986. A lot of bros in their whitey tighties. I guess probably peak whitey tighty movie of all time. But yeah, I mean,
I tried to watch it again because they brought it back on Netflix, I think, for, you know, a month ahead of the movie or whatever. I couldn't convince my, I think the in-laws were in town, and, you know, Val wasn't into it. So I couldn't draw the whole crowd, and I have to, you know, pick my spots when it comes to watching the movies in the house anyway with the kids. So I didn't get the chance to rewatch before I headed in. Didn't really feel like I needed to. Like, I remembered a lot more probably than I thought I would. But yeah, you're right on the balancing act there, you know, because you want to do the nods, but it can get cheesy real quick playing that game.
It is. And they did a good job with that. I also thought they put enough little mini flashbacks to the first movie to give you, if you were somebody confused about a certain part, they gave you enough clues, right? So yeah, man, and the script was great, and the acting was great. I mean, Miles Teller was in a role that could have been bad. I mean, just could have been bad. I thought he balanced all of that really, really well. And I just can't say enough positive things. Some of you have probably seen it. Maybe some of you haven't had the fortune to go watch it if you're listening to this show. And I don't know if you're listening through this, I would hope you did not listen through this, but man, it's just as good an in theater experience, I would say, as I've had since Endgame. I mean, like, as far as I can't believe some of the stuff that I'm seeing type of stuff, like moments in that movie, like, and it's great too. The first part into the first stunt he's doing going Mach 10 into the second act. And then that final 45 minutes, which is just, it's just bananas. Like, I just am so, I hope they win some awards, man, because that was a great experience. It was a really great experience overall. For
and I think it, like, I, you know, it, besides just being a good movie, I think it kind of reminded people in that sense what, you know, could still be a lot of fun about going to the movie theaters for a movie. Yeah. You know, because a lot of people have, you know, 60, 70, 80 inch screens. They, you know, they've got some nice speakers that you don't have to have these elaborate setups and that kind of stuff. So a lot of people have nice home setups. Maybe they're not the full blown theater stuff, but like, I think this is one to kind of remind you that it's still worth going to the theater for some movies for sure.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. So go see Top Gun Maverick. We're not trying to sell you on the movie. We're just talking about a great movie. I have also seen Lightyear. Took my kiddo on Father's Day to go see Lightyear, which was an interestingly good movie. I thought it was really good, but also I could see where people who have complained about it had issues. My expectation was for it to be a way to sell a lot of toys, and it is. It's great, but it's also, It just gives you an idea of why Andy would have like fallen in love with this toy. I don't know. It's cute, man. It's really good. The cat socks, well worth your time. So, you know, talking to you, John, but I'm talking to everybody else. If you got a kid, they're into Toy Story, take them to see it because it's worth your time. It's a good little flick. Good pop.
Yeah, I want to check it out. Just even that premise, you know, I saw a couple of previews for it. They didn't really give the actual premise away. I felt like on the first couple of previews that I saw of it. So I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, just the idea that somebody came up with to make the movie was more interesting than you would have guessed, maybe.
Yep, I would totally agree with that. I would it was different than I thought it was going to be, that's for sure. And then it was good in ways that it teaches you a lot about like why Buzz the kid, the toy is the way he is. And I like
right.
it. So, you know, that's what I wanted to come away with. But not going to see Jurassic World. Heard it's terrible. I cannot stomach it. They've gone too far with this when they had them all at that house, and you know, shout out to the nostalgia they're trying to play up, but I'm good. So that's your summer movie update. I will be going to see Thor, Love and Thunder when I can, as soon as I can. It looks phenomenal.
Yes.
Are you in on that?
Oh, I'm very in on it, you know, and I'm sure that there's going to be, you know, all the, you know, nutty people out there complaining about, you know, her having the hammer. But it's, you know, that was in the, I guess that was in comics like almost a decade ago at this point. So it's not like out of nowhere. It's not like, you know, something that's just from these last couple of years of pseudo politic type, you know, social issues. So, it looks great. You know, it's, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and you got Christian Bale in there, which, you know, yeah. Oh, come on. It looks like it's going to be very good. I'm going to go see it.
A lot of funny people, a lot of good actors, a lot of good writers. It just, it can't be bad. I'd be stunned if it wasn't like Ragnarok type good. I just would be. So, yeah, that wraps up summer movie session. I don't know what John and I will hit on next as far as... Did you watch Stranger Things? Are you into Stranger Things or not? Is that not up your alley?
You know, I kind of... It's something I'll go back to, but it's something I... Sometimes I'll... Because I'm so limited in time, sometimes I will just go in and out of series and, you know, bookmark it. I assume that I'm going to go back, but I'm somewhere in season two with Stranger Things. I don't have you been watching? Has it kept up enough to go back and get back into?
Yeah, it's good. I think season four has upped the ante. I mean, I wasn't like, hey, Stranger Things dropped, I gotta do everything I can to watch this right this second. It's not my most favorite type of show, but it's really good. This season, I think they're doing a nice job putting all of the characters together now, which is imperative for a story that's got aging characters like this, where they started out at like 11 and now they're 16 or whatever, 17. I don't know what their age is, but I will speak to your time thing here. This season has turned them all into like mini movies. They're all over an hour. And if I'm watching them, I have to stay up really late and regret it the next day. But I've enjoyed it like crazy. It is just continued to be nostalgia extreme and also a pretty solid storyline. So I really like that part of it. And I also have heard, though, that the ending of these things, like the last episode of this season, is going to be like 2 hours and 30 minutes, which is a little bit insane. Actually, it's a lot of bit insane for a show. So we'll see whether that works out or not. I will say I haven't looked at a show. I haven't at any moment in this season thought to myself, like, I just wish this episode was over. I never glance at the clock. Like, I think it's good like that. So
no, that's a good marker. I'll tell you, with these two kids right now, 1 and 3, the amount of time that I watch my own TV on my own, whatever I want to watch, honest to God, if I said how many a week, I'm probably at something, no joke, 3 to 4 hours a week, maybe.
I think that if I didn't stay up really, really late, then I would be in the same boat. Sometimes I'm just lucky enough to be up late, either working or doing something that I can watch it. But my TV, to give you an update on my 4.5-year-old, because you're kind of your boy is just a year behind or so. He's found Power Rangers, so we have lost all control. Like, we have lost. And I'm talking the power. Okay, I gotta say, and I'm hoping some people out there have an idea of what I'm talking about, because the new Power Rangers, I turned it on and they're terrible, and I mean terrible. And I'm like, dude, what we used to watch Power Rangers was so good, it was different, it's fantastic. Well, I stumble on the original Power Rangers, and dude, let me tell you, you need to kick back some beer one night and just go watch some Power Rangers original, and you will not stop laughing at how absurd this show was. Just horribly acted, horrible effort on making things seem realistic. And I can't even put into words. I was watching it with my mouth agape, and Kelby, my wife, was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I can't stop. It's so bad. I can't stop watching it. It is way worse than your memory will do justice for it." Back then, dude, I'm imagining most of you who are in this, like, I don't know, 28 to 35 range, or probably were Power Ranger people. Like, it was everything back then. And I just thought that show was unreal. But anyway, some of the newer ones are stomachable, sort of, but little guy's into it and has to get all the action figures. And shout out to Amazon, who seems to have every Power Ranger toy ever invented. They have a lot of those. So just warning you, if he catches a hold of Power Rangers, it's all downhill. It's all downhill. Because now Porter has figured out how to use Amazon on the tablet. So he finds some of these toys somehow, some way.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's figured it out. So we're in bad shape. But we should talk football. I mean, we're 20 minutes into this thing. I guess this is a Browns podcast, even though I could just do life shows sometimes. Nice relief from some of this stuff.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're going to talk wide receivers, okay? So if you guys have missed a refresher, the running backs were done. Covered those in three different stages. Did the Nick Chubb one. Did Kareem and Dearness Johnson as a running back two debate, and then did sort of the what I call AYOs, the all you others, which are Felton and Ford and John Kelly. I did those yesterday, so check those out if you're interested in learning about some of those guys, some roster projections, so on and so forth. But we have to talk about, like, the start here is Amari Cooper, and I think there's a discussion here around Amari Cooper, John, that is he's got a lot of expectations as a 28-year-old. A guy coming into this franchise who's going to get him a lot of targets. I don't think people understand he only had 99 targets and 68 catches last year in a pass heavy offense, who dealt with an injury to Michael Gallup, who dealt with didn't someone else get hurt? Did Cedric Wilson get hurt for a while? I can't remember, but I'm pretty blown away that he didn't get more opportunity in that offense with Dak coming back healthy.
99 targets isn't even what it was.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, he had a 70. I'm not trying to tell you we should be worried, but I do think as we're painting a preview here, you can see where he's not the guy that you think he was when he was traded from Oakland to Dallas in 2018, and then his first 2 years in Dallas, which were pretty good seasons, up over 1,100 yards each season. The targets get cut down some, and, you know, that's probably a byproduct of struggling to get open. Something that stood out to me when I was looking, John, was the stats against man coverage. He actually was 100 overall in receiving grade out of, I think there are 200 qualifiers here. He was 100th out of all receivers in man-to-man passing grade, sorry, receiving grade. So that could speak to a little bit of a struggle. As you get older, things stop, you know, things just stop moving a little bit as well as they did. So I'm not trying to warn you like that Amari Cooper's not going to have a solid season, but there is some data here that tells you it might not be as good as it has been in the past. You know, his yak stuff was down a little bit. His yards per route run was down last year. The drop percentages have gotten better. The catch percentages have held steady. He did force 10 missed tackles, so some of that stuff's great. But, like, he went from 408 yak yards last year to 226 this year. He's typically been up over 300. He was only at 232 in 2019. But, I mean, what are your expectations for him? And then we'll kind of get into the categories about what we can expect and sort of looking at some outcomes for him. So, you know, are you of the belief that he's going to be a number one guy, or do you think that people should temper this thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's also an indoor-outdoor question that's open with him.
That's very fair. Yeah. And so, outdoor weird weather, right? Not Oakland weather.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, in terms of like tiers, it's hard to go like number one. You know, I mean, he's nowhere near like tier one in my mind. Like, so I think that kind of expectation should be like way off the table. So the question is, you know, can he be that, you know, a solid number one for you, you know, not inside that, say, top, you know, where there's top five, six, seven receivers in the league type, you know, but can he be like a, you know, Keenan Allen type number one for you? That would probably be my top range. Like, and I don't mean like Keenan Allen necessarily the player type, but, you know, how I view him long-term, you know, he's never like a dominating presence in my mind, you know, be just a pretty solid number one, not a dominator. I think that's probably top end outcomes for me. You know, and again, just so much of this depends on who's throwing this ball. You know, it's a different deal. Like, all of these receivers will, you know, are going to have significantly different stats than you would normally project in a full season of Watson, a quarterback. So I think he could be very good. I think that Kevin is a good schemer. I think that he'll be able to scheme up some good opportunities, especially for a good route runner who's going to be where he needs to be. I think he can have a pretty good year, but he's certainly not, you know, he's not going to be anywhere even close to the realm of a Chase type player. I don't know. You know, I expect him to get 110, 120 targets on this club.
Yeah, he has to, right? I think if you look, okay, let me ask you this question. If given the quarterback insecurity that's coming, I mean, it's here, and we all know that it could get really even more weird here soon, is a season with 99 targets, 68 catches, 865 yards, and 8 touchdowns a successful season? Is that a good outcome?
I don't think so. You know, I think it's a possible one for sure, especially with that kind of with the kind of questions that we have sitting here today. But I don't think that I don't think that's going to be viewed, that salary, as a successful season for the Browns. I think he can and should do better than that. You know,
so something along the lines of maybe just a little bit higher in terms of cheer. So like 75 to 80. So something like his 2018 split between Oakland and Dallas, he was 75 catches, 1,005, but only 7 touchdowns. So I guess that is in the realm of possibility, and it's not that much different. So, like, are you expecting him to put forth one of his better seasons, which most of those, like 2020 was 128 targets, 92 catches, 1,114 yards, 5 touchdowns? He's definitely not competing with as many quality receivers to take targets away. He should be pumped full of targets. Like, there's no reason they wouldn't give this guy a ton of opportunity. I know Stefanski's offense isn't really those as a part of the Kubiak tree are not known to pump targets to wide receivers, but you have to here. I think if you go anything under triple digit targets, that's a bad outcome for the year. And if that's because of injury, right, or something along those lines, that could be there, and that would be a negative outcome. But I don't know, man. We always do these predictions based on a guy playing 17 games. Well, that's not always realistic. So it's interesting. So I don't know.
I'd like to see in that 120 target range. I'd like to see something, you know, above 1.75 in terms of yards per route run. You know, that's a pretty good outcome, I think, in terms of, you know, a couple of specifics for me. You know, the touchdowns, they can come and go. I don't know how that'll go, but, you know, that's what I would like to see, 120 targets and, you know, 1.75, 1.80 in yards per route run. I think that squares pretty well with a good season.
I think so too. If he dips down to like anything, if he's in the eight, if he plays 17 games and he's in the 800s and five touchdowns, to me, that's just a bad outcome. Like for what they're paying for, which we should remind you, the contract for Cooper here, which is adjusted for this year, the base salary, and it must be because the suspension is on the horizon for Amari Cooper, but the base salary went down to 1.1. I hope you picked up what I was putting down there. His base salary goes down to 1.1. They obviously converted a large portion of his money into a bonus. So his cap number is $20 million this year. They converted some of those into void years down the line. You're looking at Cooper is guaranteed to be here for 2 years. If you can post June 1 designate, if it's just an absolute disaster, and again, just an absolute disaster, you can post June 1st cut him next year or the year after and save a significant portion of money. But I think he's locked in through 22 and 23. And then 24, you'll see them make a pretty obvious 31-year-old wide receiver decision, in my opinion, because they won't want that cap number that'll bring at that point. But that's just me. So, yeah, man, I mean, I think we've laid it out. I always kind of try to hit the categories. What a guy who's 28 and very defined in the league, it's hard to lay these out. You know, what he does best, it's route running typically. I mean, for him, it's a variety of alignments that he can play, and it's different releases. He can be a real technician at the position, and I think that will be something you will see this year. I really like his ability to initially separate off the line, especially against bump coverage. He has gotten to the point to being a pretty good – he was actually 33rd in the entire NFL in receiving grade against zone coverage last year. So he has started to really settle into being a nice zone coverage wide receiver, but – yeah, man, he does the movement stuff at the release, a variety of different things he can do, the stutter release, the in and out, the ability to sort of set up and do that drag release with the back foot and all of that. I mean, he's really good at that. He's a guy who pays attention to the little details, which I think matter. Is there anything else there that I missed that you really like about his game?
No, I think you covered it pretty much. You know what we're looking at. You know, but definitely we'll be paying attention to those numbers for the first quarter of the season. I think you're gonna, you know, look for some drop off, look for what, you know, some warning signs there. But yeah, no, I think that covers it pretty well.
Yeah, I think the drop off warning signs are right. If it goes wrong for him, it's because he just can't. They get a bunch of man coverage, which teams have liked to do against the Browns. And he can't get away from it. He just can't get open. His targets are poor targets because he can't get open in time. And some of those things linger for him. And you start to see that decline as a guy who gets close to 30, right? He's pushing that 30-year mark and just could lose a step. All it takes is losing a fraction of a step. So something really worth keeping your eye on there for Cooper. I don't expect that in the first 2 years, but it's in a range of outcomes here. We've seen, I don't like reminding people, but we have seen some veteran receivers come here and just, okay, they've fallen off. Not saying that Barry and the group here has done that in this situation. I think they're a little bit better prepared for the type of player they want to bring in, but you have scars of Dwayne Bowe and who else am I forgetting? A bigger fellow that they had brought in,
Try and put these out of my mind. I know exactly what you're talking about, though. We've seen a bunch of
Kenny Britt is who I was thinking. Those guys start to scare you a little bit. So, but again, this is not tied to that or that decision making group and all of the elements to that. So I'm not trying to to put my fear into you, but you know, you do run a dangerous game with high paid wide receivers pushing 30. So I think Cooper will be okay, but I would temper your expectations for some sort of blow up season, especially considering the quarterback situation. The other one we want to hit on is Donovan Peoples-Jones. This is the interesting one, and this is to me a real swing player in the wide receiver room. If he becomes something really good, there's a potential we look back at the end of the season when we're reviewing everything and you're like, okay, this is why the wide receiver room was pretty solid. I don't think this wide receiver room is going to set the NFL on fire. I don't think it's a top 10 group, but can it be in that 10 to 20 range? I think a lot of that depends on Peoples-Jones. What do you think about that? Is he the swing player? I think he is. Some people could say David Bell, but I think Peoples-Jones becoming a legitimate two is a big part of the success for this group.
Yeah, that's the guy that really colors a lot of my view of this being a bit better of a receiver group than maybe some other people think is based on. I think he makes a jump. I think he does pretty well. And I think if you give him the targets, then I do think he's a swing player in terms of if things are going to go well in that unit, just receivers in general, then I think it's going to have to have a big step up for, Peoples-Jones here. So that, you know, I know that it's wide receivers we're talking about here, but just in a general sense, I would like to see, you know, between 280 and 300 targets between Cooper, DPJ and Joku. Like I think that's doable. You know, you talk like 120 for Cooper, you know, 70, 80 for DPJ and, you know, around 100 for Njoku. And I think that you can get a real nice mix of abilities and different parts of the field that you're dealing with.
Yeah. So for DPJ, from a data perspective, I think that's well said, John. He goes from 20 targets his rookie year to 58 last year, 34 catches. So a 58.6 reception percentage number, 597 yards, 3 touchdowns. His receiving grade went down from a 73.1 to a 67.0, largely predicated on, hey, man, there's a lot more snaps for you here. You're going to play wide all the time. He went up 15% in wide snaps compared to his rookie year. So there's a bunch of, in my opinion, learning. His yards after catch per reception went down from 5.7 to 4.5. He increased the drop percentage. But again, this is opportunity-based. I did like that. He was able to haul in 26 first downs. He caught 16 of 23 contested catches, which for a guy who's pretty young, that contested catch number is really good. Among the best in the NFL, he's ninth best contested catch percentage. And contested catches can be not just jump balls, but, you know, the football arrives at a difficult catch point and you bring it in. So that 23 number is a significant amount more than almost everybody in front of him except for CeeDee Lamb. CD caught 14 of 20, and right behind him was Jacoby Myers in New England, who caught 19 of 28. But yeah, I mean, those numbers to me are strong, especially speak well to a guy who's going to be pushing the ball. A large portion of what he's going to do is push the ball downfield. Like, he's a deep route runner. Comebacks, digs, post routes, double moves, blaze out concept. Like, he's a downfield guy with some mixture of a now slant concept stuff, like immediate RPO-based slant stuff. I think he will do a lot of that. He's done that in the past. I think he'll continue to do that. So can he be a downfield operator? And if you're going to have him be a downfield operator, which is what I think they'll do, then that means the middle of the field needs to go to somebody. Is that David Bell is a big slot? We know Njoku will operate there. Do they put Amari Cooper a little bit more inside than we have traditionally expected? That's something to consider, too. But we're trying to really do here is paint a couple things for you. What is DPJ good at? He's young still. He's 23. He won't turn 24 until, I think, like February, early February. February 19th. So he won't turn 24 even until after the season. So he's still now in his third. This is why you draft him young, right? You can keep growing potentially here. And that's what the benefit of this is. And it's kind of playing out in front of you with a lot of these guys that AB drafted as such young players. It's like, oh, he's only this age. He's only this age. Yeah, these guys are 4 or 5 years into the league in some scenarios, like David and like Denzel. And you're like, these guys they're still on the 25 and below list. So that's the benefit. He can still grow. His body's still sort of filling out by this point. It's not fully grown. So there's some things, some levels to athleticism that could be unlocked here. There's a lot of a lot of interesting moving parts. So he's, in my opinion, what he does well, push vertical, contested catches. He can handle the basics of those things. He blocks well. He plays with a lot of effort there. So I think he is a league average receiver. And does that, I guess the question is, before we talk about what he has to get better at this year, John, is him being a league average receiver good enough for them right now?
Yeah, in this offense, I think it can be. You know, in other offenses, that might not be the case. But, you know, can he be like a Tyler Boyd, you know, a year or two ago type guy for you? You know what I mean? If, you know, they talk about, you know, building that basketball team in terms of abilities on your receiving core, you know, different types of players so that you can do different things. And I think he fills a role there just fine. And people, I mean, he is a very good athlete. You know, sometimes it's contested catches, like especially when it comes to college players, you know, you don't want to get roped in by those guys, because a lot of times if they're doing that and they're getting a lot of opportunities as a contested catch guy, it means that they're not very good athlete. It's not the case for him. So I think that contested catch is a very good thing for what you're asking him to do. So, yeah, I think maybe like a Boyd-ish type guy for me.
Would agree. If you could get that kind of production out of him, I think it would be great. So 597, a step in the right direction for him. A good outcome to me is getting to about 650 to 700 this upcoming year. I think that would be, given quarterback difficulties, if this were 17 games of Watson that we were locked in on, I think I'd feel different. But if he can get to the 700 range, to me, that's a good outcome, and push closer to 5 or 6 touchdowns. So get me something like that. Get me around 65, 70 catches for 700 yards plus 5 touchdowns. That's a good outcome. A bad outcome to me is below what he did at or below what he did last year, which is 34, 597, and 3. That number has to go up, in my opinion. So that would be a bad, but a great outcome would be this gigantic step where he pushes the limits of being a 1,000-yard receiver. I'm not predicting that, but that's the sort of great outcome that I think you would look back on and be like, man, this thing went miles better than I even thought it was going to go for him, and he really became what we think is going to be a plus starter as a wide receiver for the foreseeable future, because he's going into year 3 here, which he's a 6th-round pick, so the contract isn't crazy, but it is getting to the point where they start making predictions about the future, if this guy's going to be a second contract type of player. So it is kind of like a crunch moment for him a little bit here, sort of the same way it is, and I'll talk about later when we do a line for Jedrick Wills. But to me, I think those outcomes make the most sense. I'm not sure if you think you have a little bit of a different target line, but to me, again, getting close to 700, 5 touchdowns, I think I said 70 receptions. I was off on that. I apologize for that. I'd like to say 75 targets, about 50 catches, 725 to 750 and 5 touchdowns. Feels like a good outcome, a very acceptable outcome, but do you expect more out of him than that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good range. I think that's just, you know, all those outcomes that you laid out there, what looks bad, what looks pretty good, and what would be, hey, we're getting an exceptional value here out of him and developing into that plus number 2, which is an exceptional value for a 6th-round guy. I think it's still in the cards for a young player like that, but I like that range of outcomes and what they would mean for the Browns.
What do you think he needs to get better at this year? So if you see him getting if he turns in this better stat, you're like, where does he improve in your opinion? Is it the yards after catch? He starts to break more tackles. He starts to turn, you know, some of those simple catch and tackle plays into bigger plays. Is it making more explosives downfield happen? I'm curious where he can take another step from your perspective.
I think it's just being, I think he's underdeveloped coming out of Michigan. I think they did that and they have done that over the last several years. I think he's a prime example. So I would like to see some Amari rub off on him and him just polish his game as a route runner. I think that really could do really good things for him. And I just like to see him with more opportunities. You know, I think that we had exceptionally poor quarterback play over the course of the year for a variety of reasons last year, and I'd like to see him get the opportunities, get him a few more of those long play opportunities. But just in the overall sense, I'd like to see Cooper rubbing off on him and him polishing his game, because I think he's still pretty raw.
Yeah, would agree with that. So unlocking things he has not done, what we would love to say when we watch his season and break it down maybe mid-year is look at these elements of his game that he has not had before, creating yards in tough situations through breaking a tackle. He's unlocked this portion of the field. He's running more out routes. He's really doing well with these certain route types that he hasn't traditionally in the past. He's got to unlock, if you're going to be a better producer, you got to unlock some things you've never done. So hopefully they can find a way to unlock opportunities for him. And if that means pushing him downfield and just giving him more of those throws, consistent throws on those deeper portion of the field routes that I think he's already pretty good at, that could be an outcome too. So yeah, I think we've handled, at least for the most part here, the top two guys in the Browns depth chart. I think that both of those guys have a lot of pressure on them this year. It's not a doubt about that. Not that they aren't going to get help from Bell and Schwartz and Njoku and Harrison Bryant and all of those guys, but they have to produce, right? Like, at the end of the day, if the Browns are, my favorite cliche, at the end of the day, if they are going to be a playoff team with the controversy that is still unresolved, then we have to look back and see two 750-plus yard guys here, in my opinion, unless David Bell is just... I don't know. David Bell is just infinitely better than we think, right? I don't know. I guess that could happen, but these two need to be it. And I think that this range of outcomes is pretty healthy for what we expect them to be this year, right, John?
Yeah, those are your reasonable expectations, I think. You know, if the Browns are going to be good, those ranges are reasonable expectations. There's no reasonable expectation for David Bell to go off as a rookie. I don't think there's even a reasonable expectation to get a ton out of Schwartz. Could those things happen? Are they, in the range of outcomes? Absolutely, for sure they are. But you don't go into the season expecting that. These guys actually have expectations on their shoulders, and deservedly so, I think.
Deservedly so, indeed. All right, man, I appreciate it. This is a good episode. I think we covered everything we can about these top two. We'll be back tomorrow to illuminate you on Schwartz, who has as many haters and fan base as I've ever seen. So we'll talk about Anthony Schwartz here, and then we'll also talk about David Bell, because these are the next two who, in my opinion, are in line to take the snaps from some form or fashion. Slot, outside, movement stuff. We'll see what happens. But those are the next two that come to mind. So check that one out tomorrow. John, great episode, man. Always. Especially the finally getting to talk about Top Gun, man. Always appreciate time spent, brother.
I know. I was able to slide that in today, so that was definitely glad, because this is really it. If I'd waited another week or two, I think I would have been SOL on that. So, yeah, thanks for having me, bud.
Top Gun and barbecue. I'm not sure there's a better day.
Well, to be had. It's a good day. Pretty good day.
All right. Thanks to John again for joining today, guys. Appreciate you supporting the pod, showing up every day, listening even during the worst, a singular worst football podcast month of the year. You guys are awesome, and you continue to download and listen to this podcast. I appreciate your support through the OBR's Twitch, through the OBR's website, and this podcast. A special thanks again to John for taking the time out of his trip where he's out and away from home to join me on the show. So thanks to him. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at @jcosmo, and we will check back in with you for your Friday episode, where we will continue on those wide receivers. Until then, appreciate you guys, and go Browns.